This is a Main Hustle Media podcast.
All the way from the A, you listen to my favorite lesbian on BRQ.
Hey, stay locked in with your favorite lesbian on Black Radical Queer. Yeah.
Hey y'all, this is Javia Nicole, aka your favorite lesbian, and you're listening to Black Radical Queer Podcast, our stories on our own terms.
Hey y'all, so you already know who I am and you already know why I'm here. So I'll spare you the spiel. However, so I just want to let y'all know, let me let y'all in on some behind the scenes stuff. So it is currently Tuesday, and episodes drop Wednesday, midnight Eastern Standard Time, which is 9 PM Pacific time. And, so I'm recording just a few hours before this is supposed to drop. And that is because it has been impossible to try to get some type of quiet time to record. I have family in town. I've just been busy. We got a lot of stuff going on. So I tried to coordinate to record with a guest. We both had a lot of stuff going on. So it's just a struggle. Not having a dedicated space to record is... it sucks. But I'm just like, hey, I'm gonna, you know, rush in after work and record and try to get this out to y'all because I don't like skipping. I do what I have to do and y'all are very understanding, but you know, just know that I'm trying, we're doing the best we can, you know, I'm doing the best I can, and my producer also has a lot on her plate, and we just out here. So if this episode doesn't sound like, you know, you may hear some bloopers, you may hear me cough or yawn, you know, because we on a time crunch and we just trying to get it done. Okay, so if you happen to hear a little extra oomph, you know, just know that I try to keep it to a minimum, but we just trying to do what we got to do to get this out to y'all. So I've had this episode outlined, but I just hadn't got a chance to record it. So, something I wanted to circle back to is mental health. Now, of course, y'all know, like, I periodically talk about it. Mental health is something that's very important to me. It's a topic that I'm passionate about. So, I read this article, or it kind of was like a reflection. I don't know. I kind of hesitate to call it an article. Well, I guess it's technically an article, but, it was, I guess an article, and, basically, it was called "I'm Not a Bad Person, But Mental Illness Has Made Me a Bad Friend," and this was by Carly Bigelow. This was this is actually old. It's almost 2 years old. However, I saw it before, and I see it's kind of making its rounds again. And so when I saw it pop up, I shared it because I'm like, I feel this, and it's something that, you know, in terms of dealing with depression, is something that's always on my mind. So basically. And I'll make sure I, you know, include a link so that y'all can actually read it for yourself. But, so, you know, basically this person who wrote it is talking about how they, you know, kind of like how they come across as a friend and how, because of their depression, they may be difficult to, kind of like deal with, and that it's not something everybody can deal with and that's okay. So it's like, you know, but they're acknowledging that, you know, it's tough. And, you know, it's something that it resonated with me because I definitely often, ask myself like, hey, does my mental health make me a bad friend, a bad partner? You know, how does it, the way that it impacts the people I engage with, like, do the cons outweigh the pros? Like, do I drain them more than I pour into them? Or, am I not present enough? You know, I ask myself those types of questions. And so really, I'm also in therapy, and it's something that I have talked about in therapy because I have a lot of feelings about my depression and the impact it has had in my life. And some things I'm trying to reframe. I'm trying to reframe it so that I don't feel essentially victimized by depression, like so that I don't feel like depression is just like this thing that has complete control of my life and I just have no say or anything. But I also, you know, I want to be able to look at it differently while also not minimizing the impact it has either. So I don't want to exaggerate its impact and I don't want to minimize it. And I have kind of leaned more toward minimizing it. And so I'm trying to, as time has gone on, I've been trying to become more and more transparent and vulnerable about how I really feel and like how it does impact me. And, you know, without feeling silly or without feeling like a burden. But I also know that I'm not in it by myself. So, you know, for folks like my wife who is with me every day and who engages with me regularly, I know that, you know, there's ways that it comes across that, you know, aren't great. I'm very, very aware of it. I'm very self-conscious about it. And it really does make me feel away, right? So what I'm striving for in this journey as I kind of continue to get to know myself better and I acclimate to being someone who like is living with depression, because I don't want to, again, minimize the impact. Like, okay, I want to basically reframe it in my mind so that I look at it like similar to how I see my vision. I have low vision. So there are some things I cannot do. But there are a lot of things I can do. And there are a lot of ways that I have made adjustments to accommodate my low vision. So there may be things that I don't do. Like, for instance, I do not drive. I don't feel safe driving. And because I can't see well enough to drive. So I have made accommodations for myself, like using rideshare and transit and things like that, because I know I'm not comfortable with driving because I can't see. However, it has not completely, it doesn't dictate my whole life. So I still work. And I mean, with ability to, you know, everybody's ability, everybody ability is different is what I'm trying to say. I was about to say ranges, but varies was the word I was looking for. Everybody's ability varies. So for some people who may be dealing with the same or similar eye conditions, they may not be able to work. So I recognize that like it's not the same for everybody. But for me, basically, I'm very cognizant of what my limitations and what my parameters are. And looking at it more like parameters, not just limitations. Because then that, you know, has a negative connotation. And it's like the emphasis shifts to what I cannot do. And what I'm looking at it as, oh, there are things I can and can't do. So there are parameters on those things. So that's how I look at my vision. And I'm trying to reframe my depression to look at it in the same way. Instead of looking at it like, why me? Why do I have to deal with this? Why do I have to have? And honestly, that was a large part of how I felt when I got my diagnosis of the persistent depressive disorder and PTSD. That was a big thing. I'm just like, why I got, you know, I mourned a lot for this person who I am not. Like I mourned like the loss of a Javia who was not depressed and who did not have these issues. So I was stuck in that. And in therapy, based on what I have gathered from therapy so far, what I'm trying to do is reframe it. And the comparison that I made for myself as a result of therapy was if I reframe it and look at it like my vision. So there are parameters. So the same thing with my depression. There are parameters on what I can and can't do based on the capacity or lack thereof while I'm functioning with depression or whatever. I mean, that can change. It does change. It's not always the same. So I think that there is a this goal to balance accountability and also while also like releasing the things that are out of my control. So with the accountability, it's like me being mindful of the fact that I do impact other people. I did not choose to have depression, just like I did not choose to have this eye condition. But the fact that I do have those things affects other people. So because I cannot see, my wife does the driving. So that impacts her, because I'm sure there are times where she may not want to drive. Now, I also use rideshare. So like what we used to do, a lot of times she would like pick me up from work, and I used to ride with her a lot more. And that's not something that I do as much anymore, partially because we do not work close. But there were times even when we didn't work close where she would like get off and still come pick me up and all that. And I wanted to alleviate some of that pressure off of her of being the primary, you know, being the sole driver. So I'm like, okay, you know, I'll take transit or I'll take rideshare. And so now with my job, I use like a commuter benefit or whatever. So I use rideshare getting to and from work, so she doesn't have to pick me up. We'll ride together if it makes sense. Like if I'm working closer to her location or she's working closer to my location, and it's like, hey, let's ride together if it lines up. If we don't get off at the same, you know, in close proximity to each other, I'm like, hey, I'll see you when I get home or whatever. So being mindful of the impact. So the same thing with depression. Like I can say, oh, well, I know that, you know, I feel moody or I feel down, or like, you know, we just yesterday we were having a little exchange, I guess. And she kind of like rubbed me the wrong way. And I probably rubbed her the wrong way too. But I was just honest and said like, hey, I know we both got stuff going on. I am not in the headspace to go back and forth with you. I'm just not there. Like I'm already feeling some kind of way, because in the moment I was feeling a lot of grief. I was like, I mean, and I've been grieving, you know, but I was just kind of being hit particularly hard with grief. And I was just like, you know, I can't, like, I'm already kind of, I'm tired. Work was, you know, kind of draining. And then I have the grief operating and just my baseline depression. So it was a lot. And I was just like, I ain't got it. Like, I ain't got energy. I ain't got the forks or the spoons, as I like to say. So I just was honest with her. I was like, hey, like, I know we both have, you know, our stuff going on. We both, you know, probably, you know, feeling some kind of way and going through what we're going through. But I just have to be honest that I cannot, like, I don't have it right now to like go back and forth or fuss or argue, or not even fuss or argue. It's just like go back and forth kind of thing. I'm like, I ain't got it, you know? So being mindful of and accountable for how I impact other people, as well as being transparent about like what I'm going through, because it's not something I would talk about. I would keep it to myself and just do a lot of internal, trying to internally process and not fully understanding it. And on the outside, I'm just coming across as moody or probably a bitch. Like I'm sure there are probably many people who think I'm a bitch, and it just kind of is what it is. And it's just from the moodiness, like it's not, is that an irritability. And that's something that typically more so manifests in men. As a result of depression, like one of the ways that it is exhibited is through irritability and anger. Usually that's more prevalent in men, but I absolutely have the irritability piece. I get irritated very easily, especially if I'm already feeling a way, then it don't take nothing. So I try to be transparent about that and just say like, hey, like I'm not, you know, like I'm feeling some kind of way, or I'm feeling down, or, you know, this is irritating. And so that I can kind of, you know, be upfront, so that hopefully, and I know this is ideal and it's not always possible, but hopefully the people I engage with don't take it personally. Now, sometimes it's hard not to take shit personally. We're human and shit hurts, you know, but I still at least try to say like, hey, this is what it is, so that they don't, you know, take it personally. So I say all that to say, you know, we have our things, we all have our things that we're kind of like operating with, whether it be, physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually. We have all these things that we're, you know, carrying with us. And so, I think that reading that article where, you know, the author was talking about, you know, well, I feel like my depression makes me a bad friend. You know, I know that I can be a lot. I think having that type of self-awareness, but also not punishing ourselves for that is necessary. But we do have to be accountable. Like, we impact other people. We're not islands. So we do impact other people. So I think that it is very beneficial to be transparent and to have conversations with those, especially those close to you, because they usually catch the brunt of it by saying like, hey, I have anxiety. And so this is how this comes across. And, you know, just kind of having that level of self-awareness where you recognize that's what's going on so you can communicate it to them. And we are not all there. It took me time to get to a place where I could say, hey, I am depressed. And part of how my depression manifests is that I'm irritable. And so that's why I'm coming across this way. I honestly just thought that as I was growing up and even in my early 20s, before I got like my formal diagnosis, I thought that moodiness was just a personality trait of mine. So I would always say, I'm just a moody person. I'm just moody. And I really, the way that I talked about it was like it was a personality trait, not recognizing that it was actually the manifestation of mental illness. Like, I didn't know, because I didn't know at the time, that no, this moodiness is a direct result of your depression and how depression impacts your brain in particular. So that's something I had to learn. But once I learned it, initially, I still didn't communicate that because I was in my feelings, because I felt a lot of resentment about being depressed and about like having a long-term form of depression. I very much was in my feelings, and I still sometimes feel a way about it. Like, it's not just like, oh, it's all sunshine and rainbows. Great. I still sometimes feel a way, but, it's something that I'm growing to accept more and understand better that like, hey, this is just a characteristic of what I got going on. Right. So yeah, so it's a process. But as we realize and learn these things about ourselves and we get more understanding, then, part of our accountability and our growth is like communicating with other folks and explaining to them, like, this is what I'm going through. You know, this is kind of like, this is how you can better understand me. Okay. So, I'm pausing for another disclaimer. Y'all, might hear some noise because, as you know, I'm recording at home. I'm not home by myself. So, and then y'all already know about my neighbors downstairs. They wild, you know, they got a bowling alley, wrestling ring, boxing ring, something going on down there. My father-in-law is here. I got a big ass dog. And I know that like my wife is going to be getting home and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, it just is what it is. So y'all might hear some stuff. But I'm trying to keep, you know, I try to like cushion the noise as much as possible and block out as much as I could in this situation. So anyway, so mental health. Okay. So, yeah, so the article really, resonated with me, which is why I wanted to do an episode that really, like, I know it's just one article, but, you know, I just thought it was something important, like for us to, well, for one, I wanted to circle back to mental health, and two, I thought it was very vulnerable of this author to say like, hey, you know, I think about like how the type of like friend, that my mental health makes me. And, for me, it was nice to see that expressed because it's something that I think about a lot. I think about, what type of partner and friend, and I'm actually going to ask my wife and my friends, like, you know, how am I to you? Like, you know, how do I engage with you? How does it impact our relationship? Like, I honestly want their feedback. So I have to do another episode where I actually talk to some folks and ask them, like, you know, as your homie or as your wife or whoever who is chronically depressed, how we working this out? Like, what is our relationship like and how have you feel? And I know that things have fluctuated over the years. I've had bouts of major depression where it's like, I very much isolated. And then I have like my times where I'm kind of more on the upside and my depression is milder. And then I have my moderate times, which is more my baseline where it is, you know, still very much prevalent, but I'm still able to function. You know, it's not like debilitating where I'm where I'm not getting out the bed, but it's been there too. Or, you know, so it has fluctuated over the years. And I'm grateful that I've had people in my life who have been in my life for several years so they can like give me that feedback. So I'm going to ask them, and if they're down to give to tell me, I'll share that with y'all. So, I want to, kind of read a little part of this article. So the author says, I've had depression and anxiety for over half my life. It's been with me through 2 cross-country moves, high school and university, the beginning of my career, and now into my marriage. And it shaped me. It's taught me things like the importance of asking for help and respecting my limitations. It's made me stronger, more empathetic, and more self-aware. It's also at times made me a very bad friend. It's made me selfish. After all, it can be hard to focus on someone else's life when your own feels so broken. It's made me hard to get along with and exhausting. It's hard to be friends with someone who is a drain on your patience and energy. And at times, it's made me mean. My depression can lead me to say vicious things out of bitterness or in an effort to hurt someone else before they hurt me. My anxiety can be triggered in social situations, causing me to blurt things out without thinking. All right, so I won't read the whole thing, but, you know, some of this I can definitely relate to. I have had depression for even before I had the formal diagnosis. I recognized that I at least had bouts of depression. And once I got the diagnosis, then things started to make more sense to me. And I was like, oh, I'm not just moody. Like there's, you know, more to it than that. So it has been with me for, you know, a long time. And like the author said, you know, through a cross-country move, through school, through career, through marriage. And it has absolutely shaped me. And I'm learning more about, you know, respecting my limitations and asking for help, like the author mentioned. I definitely think it's made me more empathetic. I think it partially has equipped me to be in the field that I'm in, because I can literally say I can understand. And so when my patients express certain things to me, they don't have to go on and on or like feel like they have to over explain themselves or, you know, or feel like they always have to explain themselves, because I can genuinely relate. I had a patient who was talking about depression and just being and just kind of like not having an appetite and feeling so drained and, you know, kind of fluctuating between insomnia and sleeping too much. And, you know, I was just like, I feel you. Like, I understand. And so he didn't feel like he had to defend himself or justify his behavior, because I was like, I understand from experience. And as part of the role that I work in, luckily, is that part of the what we bring to the table is that we do have lived experience with some of the things that we help people with. So it has absolutely made me more empathetic in my career as well as in my personal life, and more self-aware. But I do relate to this author saying that it's made them a bad friend, because I don't feel like I say like vicious things out of bitterness. The main part that stuck out to me is that it is hard to be friends with someone who is a drain on your patience and energy. And I feel like depression, I know, is draining for me going through it. So I know that for people who deal with me, that at times it has to be draining for them too. It has to test their patience. It has to get on their nerves. I know that it can be a lot, because it feels like a lot to me. Like, I am a lot for myself. So I know that to my loved ones, I have to be a lot sometimes, you know? And so that's something I'm very aware of, and I'm very self-conscious about. Honestly, y'all, I'm very self-conscious about the way that my health impacts those around me. So, another thing too is that, you know, depression, because I can't speak on all mental illness. I can only speak on my experience. And my experience is first and foremost with depression and then also with PTSD, but more so depression than anything else in terms of like day in, day out, like what impacts me daily, because PTSD more so is a trigger thing for me. Like, it's not something that, and I'm not triggered in my daily life, so I don't have to face it daily, but depression I do. And so, but like depression impacts your memory, you know, it impacts your intelligence to an extent. Like there are things, it makes it harder for you to like a long term, like it's particularly long term depression. You know, you can start to forget things and all that. And so that has also been a bit of a challenge, because I used to pride myself on my memory, and I have become luckily a lot more structured. So that helps me to remember things, but I used to be able to manage by holding, like keeping things in my head and just remembering off the top of my head. I relied on that very much. And, you know, as I've gotten older and as I've dealt with, as I've lived longer with depression, I'm not able to do that. I take notes. I have a calendar. Like I, you know, put everything in my phone or whatever, because I can't rely on just off the top of my head anymore. That has definitely changed. And also, depression impacts like how you display emotion. And so something that I get, that I have gotten, I don't get it as much anymore, but definitely when I was like dating, you know, before I got all married, what I got a lot is that, oh, you're so nonchalant and like nothing phases you. And I'm actually a very sensitive person, but I don't wear my heart on my sleeve. But part of that is because depression impacts how you, and not depression isn't the only thing, because there are other mental health things that impact it too. But depression can impact how you display emotion. It's called your affect. So you might have a flat affect or a blunted affect. So, you know, whereas like a situation where other folks might laugh, you may not laugh, or a situation where other folks may cry, you might laugh. Like your what you display emotionally may not be congruent with the situation. So for me, a lot of times that manifests in like one of the biggest ways I see it is in regards to excitement. People can be very excited and super hype, and I'm just like, I can feel excitement, but I might just be chill. Like they might be like, oh my God. I'm like, okay, that's cool. You know, something that my wife pointed out to me in terms of how I speak, instead of saying like, oh, something's good, I'll say, oh, that's not bad. And not like I never say something's good, but like a lot of times, you know, I might try something, or I might be like, oh, it's not bad, or, you know, so stuff like that is like, I feel like that's just another manifestation of that. I tend to be on the downside. So even when I'm excited, I'm not a jumping up and down type of person. I'm not super hype. Yeah. That's just not how I display my emotion. And it's not on purpose. I'm not purposely holding back excitement, or I'm not purposely withholding expressing emotions in a certain way. That is just honestly naturally how I express. So like when I'm excited about something, like, you know, my voice might get high. So I'll be like, oh my God, you know, my voice might get high, but I may not like jump up and down. I may not, you know, like, or just, it's like there are certain body language things that people exhibit, you know, for excitement. And I just may not show that. So yeah, so it does impact how my emotions are displayed. And I say all that to say that that can also impact your relationships, because, you know, from people telling me, oh, you're so nonchalant, they were perceiving that I didn't care about things when I actually did. And even though I could say verbally, I do care, they felt like my body language was not in alignment with that. So I might say, hey, this really matters to me. This is really important to me. But they may feel like, well, you don't act like it, or it doesn't seem like it, because you just seem so, you know, cool, calm, collected type of thing. But that is just a natural thing. Like I'm, you know, that's just part of how my emotions are displayed. So, but that can make relationships a challenge. That can make connection a challenge. So I find that, like, you know, a lot of the way that I connect with people is intellectually, but I have to try really hard to not intellectualize things, which therapy. I mean, it's something my therapist pointed out, and I was like, yeah, you're right. But I, you know, as I thought about it, I'm like, you know, I realized that part of my tendency to intellectualize is because I could rely on that more than emotional. Like, I feel like I'm more equipped to approach things from that perspective than from an emotional perspective, because a lot of times just how I display emotion isn't, like, for instance, I'll just give an example because it might make it make more sense. Let's say grief. Now, as I've gotten older, I cry more now, but I used to not really cry. And so let's say for grief, if I'm grief or disappointment, I'll say disappointment. So let's say I'm feeling disappointed. So instead of me, like, showing that I'm upset, like crying or displaying it in my body language, I might just be like, man, like, you know, I might, me intellectualizing would be like, dang, I was really looking forward to that. So I'm disappointed. And like, this is why I feel disappointed. So in my mind, it goes straight to the, let me start, like, kind of breaking it down logically. Like, you feel disappointed because this, as opposed to just feeling the feeling and it just coming out, you know, however it comes out. So yeah, that's part of, for me, like, how I've always operated, and I'm trying to get away from that. So I'm trying to just, like, be more mindful of, like, how I feel and just letting it come out, as opposed to explaining how I feel. So instead of me explaining how I feel disappointed, explaining how whatever, you know, explaining that, hey, I'm grieving and this is why and blah, 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 just grieving. And if that means that tears come, that's fine. If that means that I need to excuse myself, that's fine, you know, but just letting it come out how it comes out and not feeling the urge to explain it. It is a work in progress. I have not mastered it, but I think that working on it is something that helps improve vulnerability, which can improve your close relationships. So anyway, I say all this to say, you know, this is something I wanted to speak on because I know I'm not the only person. Just like that author, you know, was saying, hey, I feel like my depression and anxiety make me hard to get along with and all this kind of stuff. I'm like, hey, I feel you. I absolutely feel like sometimes my depression can make me hard to get along with. It can make me frustrating. It can make me kind of trying in terms of someone's patience or whatever. And I'm aware of it. I feel terrible about it. If I could snap my fingers and not have depression, I'd be snapping with the quickness, you know? But it's the reality. So I'm mindful of that. And so I just think that, you know, it's something we can all work on, our self-awareness, to make sure that we're mindful of, like, how we impact people. And not to say that we should feel guilty, even though I will admit that I do feel some guilt. I do feel some guilt around, like, the impact that I have. My bad, y'all. I do feel some guilt around the impact that I have, but I'm trying not to feel guilty. I'm really trying to reframe my thinking, but I'm just being honest with y'all about the place I'm in now. And I'm not completely there yet. I still feel a lot of guilt. I still feel it sucks. I feel really terrible about the way I come across sometimes. And it's not on purpose. Like, I hate the way I'm perceived sometimes. But as we become aware of these things, if we just communicate with those close to us, like, hey, this is what I'm going through, I think it can make a big difference in how we relate to each other, and maybe can help start to alleviate some of that guilt. Because if we're feeling like, hey, you know, I'm having this kind of impact on people I care about, if we just talk to them about how we feel and what we're going through, then it can give them more context. It can probably help them to not take things personally, because that's part of what can create strain on a relationship, friendship, whatever, is like that person is feeling like they're responsible. When I'm like, hey, you're not responsible for me feeling some kind of way. This is how my brain is set up. Or if it is in response to something you did, let's talk about it. So I try to, you know, have those conversations like with my wife and say, hey, like this came across to me this way. You may not have intended to come across the way, but I'm just letting you know, based on the way my brain set up, you know, based on what I'm going through, this is how that came across to me. And so this is making me feel some kind of way. And let me just be transparent about that. It's not easy. And I do feel a lot of guilt. It just sucks. Like, I hate that that's the impact I have. But I am working to reframe it and working on alleviating that guilt, because I don't want to carry guilt for something that is out of my control, but I do want to be accountable. And that's all I'm saying. That was like the whole point of all of this, is for us to balance, have that balance between accountability, you know, being accountable, being mindful, being communicative, being vulnerable, but also not harboring guilt toward ourselves and resentment toward ourselves, and not, you know, beating ourselves up for something that we are impacted by or something that we're carrying, you know, some type of mental or physical health thing that we're carrying that is just out of our control. And so that's the journey I'm on with my depression. That's the journey I'm on with my vision, and I'm working on it daily. And so it's been heavy on my mind. And so when I saw that article circulating again, I was like, that's what I want to talk about. I wanted to circle back to mental health anyway. And I just want for you all to think about whatever it is that's impacting you. It doesn't have to specifically be depression. It doesn't have to specifically be a physical disability or ailment, but anything that you know that is impacting your capacity. And by your capacity, I mean your spoons, or like your ability to do the things. So your capacity is like, let's say your capacity is like your battery. And if you're at 100%, you have capacity to do all the things. But there are things that drain your battery, just like on your phone. You know, you have background apps that be running while you are not even using them. You got the apps that are in the forefront that you are actively using. All those things are draining your battery. I describe my depression as it's a background app that's always running. How much energy it's using fluctuates, but it's always running in the background. So that's one of the things I got running in the background. I got other apps. I got the low vision app. I got a depression app. I got the PTSD app. You know, I got all those things. So we all have our stuff, all those apps that are impacting our capacity, our battery life. If we just communicate with one another about, hey, these are things that are kind of draining my battery. So I'm not at my best. I'm not at 75%. I'm not at 50%, you know, or giving some kind of idea of where you are, so that, you know, your loved ones have a fuller understanding of like how they can engage with you and, you know, what may or may not be a fit for you, why you may respond to things a certain way. Just having that understanding, having the self-awareness, and then being able to communicate it to other people, I think is what is most important. And so for me, I'm trying my best to be more transparent about like, hey, my battery ain't at 100%, you know, and with that background app of depression running, my battery is honestly never at 100%. I can get a good 90. I get a good 90 and I'm ecstatic. I'm like through the moon because I'm at a 90. But a lot of times I'm operating at a 60 or a 50. Operating at a 50 is like my baseline. Sometimes I'm at a 30, you know, so it's like just being honest and having a way to communicate that to our loved ones and say like, hey, these are the things that are impacting me. Like, you know, work is stressing me. Like I have this health stuff going on or whatever, these things on my mind. Just being more vulnerable and transparent can make a big difference. And also because you never know how that they might be able to support you. You might be able to support each other. There's so much possibility there if we just communicate, and take the risk of being transparent and vulnerable. So yeah, I've been rambling. but that's basically it. You know, I've been reflecting a lot on what type of partner and friend does my mental health make me? And so I want for you to think about like, what type of person does your capacity make you, or lack thereof? So think about, where's your battery? You know, what kind of battery are you operating with right now? Like, how full is your battery? And what type of friend and partner does that make you? What can you do to recharge your battery? How can you be transparent and vulnerable about your battery life so that your loved ones know what's up and maybe they can help you recharge, or maybe they can just take a step back so that they're not, you know, draining more energy, or so they just have that understanding. You know, we self-care is a thing, but so is community care. And we want to take care of ourselves and each other. And I think that just having that communication open is a way that we can do both those things. And it's something that I am striving for. I'm striving to take better care of myself, but also be more engaged in community care by, like, you know, letting folks know if I know of anything, letting folks know the support I need, or just communicating to them where I'm at, because even that is better than nothing. All right. So I think I am done. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for those who are patrons. I appreciate you. I absolutely need a dedicated space. Like, y'all, this shit is a struggle, but we doing what we got to do. You know, if you want to become a patron, you can go to patreon.com/blackradqueer, BLKRADQWR. Once again, that is Patreon, patreon.com/blackradqueer, BLKRADQWR. There are various levels that you can support. Thank you to my supporters. Like, I see y'all. You can also do one-time contributions via Venmo and Cash App. It's blackradqueer, BLKRADQWR, on across all the things. Everything is appreciated, and it really, I do appreciate y'all contributing, because it does help to reinforce the fact that this is a show that's important to you all and that you get something from. It is a labor of love. It's a labor though. So I'm grateful that, you know, you all appreciate it. So yeah, y'all can check me out there. I'm gonna keep doing what I have to do to try to get these episodes out to y'all, but just bear with me because we're doing the best we can. Honestly, like, me and Maine both, you know, are working, and both in households where we do not live alone, and we have to contend with noisy ass neighbors, and we know we're doing our little home setup, so we're just trying to get it done. So as we go through our growing pains, you know, just bear with us. Also, I wanted to kind of commemorate that I did hit 20K. I've surpassed 20K at this point. It's been so hectic, I haven't had a chance to really, like, acknowledge it significantly. So I might just circle back to it when I hit 25K. Yeah, because it's just crazy to me. I'm like, I hit 10K and 20K in the same year. So y'all some real ones. And I've gotten a lot of new listeners because, yeah, it's the numbers are showing me that. And so I'm very appreciative. Yeah, like, we out here doing our thing. So but that's it, y'all. Thank you for tuning in. I definitely appreciate it. That was just what was on my mind. And it's sometimes it can be a struggle to coordinate with guests. So y'all might be, you know, getting more solo episodes. And y'all have given me very good feedback on solo episodes. I'm telling y'all, it still surprises me. So I appreciate that. I'll keep bringing them, because sometimes it's easier for me to just, you know, carve out some time and record on my own. But I do want to bring y'all some guests as well. I have some dope people who I want to talk to on here. So be on the lookout for that. All right, y'all. So that is all. Thank you for tuning in. Appreciate you. And until next time, I'm out.
Black Radical Queer is a Main Hustle Media podcast hosted by Javia Nicole. BRQ is produced and edited by Charmaine Fury, and the show's theme music was created by The Brothers Records. You can connect with us on Twitter or Instagram at Black Rad Queer. That's BLKRADQWR. You can also connect with us on Facebook through the Black Radical Queer Podcast Facebook fan page or the BRQ discussion group. You can get Black Rad Queer merch on teespring.com/BlackRadQueer, BLKRADQWR. And you can leave a voicemail, call in, ask a question, those types of things on the BRQ Google Voice line. And that number is 937-601-8647.
Main Hustle Media. Turn your side hustle into your main hustle.